All right, let's dive in. Today we're looking at a case that feels like it could be ripped from the headlines, you know, even though it happened way back in the 1970s. We're talking New York City, heroin epidemic, a city on edge. It's a landmark Supreme Court case about, well, how about second chances and the right to work?
Yeah, and it seems like a pretty straightforward question on the surface.
Right.
You know, can a government agency, and we're talking the massive New York City Transit Authority here, the TA,
right,
can they just flat out deny a job to anyone taking methadone?
Right.
Even if it's legally prescribed as part of a treatment program, like what?
Yeah, you'd think that would be pretty open and shut.
Yeah, you would think.
But this thing went all the way to the Supreme Court.
It did. And that's where things get really interesting. This case, New York City Transit Authority v. Beezer, really throws a wrench in the gears of our legal system.
Okay, so walk me through this.
Okay, so the TA, they're responsible for millions of riders every single day, right?
Right.
And they're arguing they have to put safety first.
Of course, yeah.
Like, one accident is too many. That was basically their slogan.
And I get that, right? I mean, can you imagine the pressure of keeping a city's entire transportation system running smoothly and safely?
Totally.
But, I mean, they took it to an extreme, right? Like a blanket ban on any kind of methadone use.
Yes. Even for, you know, even for desk jobs.
Right.
And that's really what sparked this whole legal challenge. You had all these people, you know, folks who were either denied jobs or they were fired because they were on methadone treatment.
Right.
They argued that this was a violation of their equal protection rights.
Makes sense.
And they even pointed out, remember, this is the 70s, a time of massive social change.
Oh, yeah.
They said, hey, this policy is having a much harsher impact on Black and Hispanic communities.
Wow.
But here's the thing. Get this. The Supreme Court decides to kind of sidestep that entire racial discrimination argument, and they focus only on the equal protection claim, using what's called the rational basis test.
Okay, and remind me, what's the rational basis test all about?
So the rational basis test, it's kind of like the legal system's way of giving the government, you know, the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
Basically, did the TA's policy have any kind of logical connection to a legitimate goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty low bar to clear, and the court basically said, yeah, we can see their reasoning.
Okay, so what was the reasoning?
Well, Justice Stevens, he writes the majority opinion, and his argument goes a little something like this. He's like, okay, methadone, even when it's prescribed, it's still a narcotic.
Right.
There's a risk, even if it's small, of misuse, you know. The TA, they have a huge responsibility to the public.
Yeah.
Individual assessments would be a total logistical nightmare. And hey, at least they're not banning former methadone users, just current ones.
Right, right. So they kind of drew a line there.
They did. And, you know, this is really classic Warren Court era stuff.
Okay.
Back then, courts tended to defer to government agencies, especially when it came to public safety.
Right. But I'm guessing there were people who didn't agree with this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not everyone was on board, even back then.
Okay, so who are the dissenting voices in this?
Well, Justices White and Marshall, they came out swinging. They pointed out, you know, there's no evidence actually directly linking methadone use to, you know, to bad job performance.
Interesting.
Especially for those non-safety sensitive roles, this is irrational. It's discriminatory, especially considering its impact on minority communities.
Wow.
They weren't buying the whole one accident is too many argument when there was actually no evidence to back it up.
That's a good point. And, you know, what I find really fascinating here is that even Justice Powell, who was, you know, considered to be more on the conservative side, even he took issue with the TA banning former methadone users, right? Like people who had completed treatment.
Right.
That kind of tells you just how extreme this whole policy really was. Even he believed that once someone finished treatment and they stayed clean, they deserved a fair shot.
Yeah, and this is where the case starts to feel like a time capsule almost.
Right.
You know, capturing a very specific moment in time when our understanding of addiction was just so much less nuanced than it is today.
Right.
Back then, you know, methadone was viewed with all this suspicion. It was seen as like almost substituting one drug for another rather than, you know, a legitimate form of treatment.
Right. It's like they weren't really seeing the whole picture.
Exactly. They were missing the bigger picture.
So, okay, we've got this case, right, from back in the 70s when, like, disco was everywhere and bell bottoms and, you know, our understanding of addiction was, well, a little different.
Yeah, a little less, shall we say, informed than it is now.
Right, exactly.
Back then, addiction was often seen as, like, a moral failing, you know?
Right.
A weakness of character or something like that.
Right, right.
Now, of course, we recognize it as a chronic disease.
Yeah.
A medical condition, really, requiring ongoing care and support.
Right. And that makes you wonder, like, how would Beazer even play out today?
Yeah.
In a modern courtroom, you know, with what we know now about addiction and all the research and evidence.
That's the real question, isn't it? I mean, we've got mountains of research now showing just how effective these medication-assisted treatments are,
right,
like methadone, in helping people achieve long-term recovery.
Okay, so imagine you're a lawyer, right?
Okay.
And you're arguing Beazer today.
Uh-huh.
You've got all this evidence, all this proof about methadone working, about people in stable treatment being more reliable employees, all of that. How do you dismantle the TA's argument?
You hit them right where it hurts, their whole safety first mantra.
Okay.
Study after study showing people on methadone are less likely to miss work,
more
likely to follow all those safety protocols and, you know, be positive contributors in the workplace.
Interesting.
You turn their whole argument on its head.
Okay, but wouldn't they still cling to the public safety thing, especially with all those riders?
Sure, but that's where the Americans with Disabilities Act comes in.
Right.
The ADA, that's the wrench in their plan.
Okay, because of reasonable accommodation, right?
Yes.
They have to prove accommodating someone would cause an undue hardship.
That's the key, yeah.
So with methadone, that might be, what, letting them take their medication?
Right, maybe give them a private place to do it or offer support.
Right, through a program or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not talking about excluding everyone anymore.
Right.
We're looking at each person, each job.
It's individualized.
Figuring it out.
The ADA says, stop with the generalizations, stop with the stereotypes.
Right.
Look at the evidence, the person, the job.
So it's more inclusive.
Much more, it levels the playing field.
Well, what about different types of jobs?
Yeah.
Like safety-sensitive ones, a train operator, for example.
That's where it gets really, really tricky.
Yeah.
It comes down to that case-by-case assessment.
Right.
The courts, they've been grappling with this forever, trying to balance those individual rights with public safety.
So the ADA doesn't just make all the hard questions vanish?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
There's still a lot of gray area.
A lot of gray area, a lot of legal battles.
About what's reasonable, what's not.
Exactly. It depends on the context.
So even with the ADA, we're still debating.
Absolutely. And that's why cases like Beazer are still so important.
Right.
They show us this tension that's always there between individual rights and public safety.
Yeah.
And we need these legal challenges to protect people with disabilities.
Wow. Okay, so we've gone back in time to the 70s.
Yeah.
Explored this landmark Supreme Court case.
Right.
Grappled with the ADA. It's been a journey.
It really has. New York City Transit Authority v. Beazer, it's like a snapshot, you know, of where we were legally and socially.
Right.
How much we've learned about addiction.
Yeah, and how the law sometimes struggles to keep up.
Tough.
You know, we talked about the rational basis test, reasonable accommodations.
Right.
That push and pull between individual rights and public safety.
Right.
But I keep thinking, what are the big takeaways from Beazer? What lessons can we apply to other situations where we see this kind of clash between rights and risks?
I think Beazer really serves as a warning. It reminds us to be so careful about those blanket exclusions based on, you know, group membership.
Right, right.
Especially when those groups already face so much stigma.
Like people with substance use disorders, mental health conditions.
Exactly. Any marginalized group, really.
Beazer is telling us, demand evidence. Don't just accept assumptions, especially when someone says a group is a safety risk.
Right, and that evidence has to be specific, relevant to the actual job.
Not based on stereotypes or outdated ideas.
Exactly.
That makes you wonder, what if the court had actually looked at the TA's data?
Yeah.
You know, how many methadone users were already working there?
Right, were there any actual safety problems?
Would that have changed anything?
It's a great question. Would hard data have beaten out fear?
Right.
We'll never know, but it makes you think, how do we make decisions?
Especially when it comes to policies that impact people's lives.
It's got to be evidence-based.
Right, and it shows how important those legal protections are.
Yeah, the ADA, it's not perfect, but it's been huge.
It's changed the conversation.
From shutting people out to bringing them in.
Right.
From making assumptions to actually looking at the individual.
The laws are only one part of this, right?
Right. We can't just legislate away stigma and discrimination.
So what else can we do?
Education, advocacy, sharing stories. We have to challenge those narratives that dehumanize people.
Right. Share stories of recovery, build empathy.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up, I feel, I don't know, hopeful, but also determined.
Yeah.
Beezer may have been a setback, but it also started something.
It did. It forced us to confront some hard truths about our own biases.
And to keep fighting for a better world.
A more just world, a more equitable world.
Right, and that fight's still going on.
On legal grounds, in the court of public opinion.
And it's a fight we can't give up on.
Absolutely not, because Beezer isn't just about methadone or buses and trains. Mm-hmm. It's about all of us, our humanity, taking care of each other.
Building a society where everyone has the chance to succeed.
That's it.
That's a powerful message to end on.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone.
We'll see you next time.